Welcome to the Steelers by the Lake podcast. My name is James, joined once again by my co-host, Cody. Cody, how are you this fine Monday evening?
James, I am fantastic. I am happy to have my dear friend, you, back at work. You've been gone all week. You've been in Florida, enjoying the sun, enjoying the nice weather. We're snowing outside right now, for those of you that don't know, Northwest PA. Woot woot. But we're surviving the stupid cold weather. James, how are you?
I'll tell you how I am, buddy. I'll tell you how I am. I'm glad to be back. I missed my family. It's nice to see the dogs. It's nice to see my friends. And it's nice to get back to talking Steelers football, my friend. I also want to give a shout out to all the listeners out there. You guys have really helped us out. All the following on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and Instagram and TikTok and everywhere. You guys are really showing up in force. Lots of new followers on Facebook. And even this week, a new 5-star rating on Apple Podcast. You forgot to do the nice words afterwards, but I still appreciate it very much. I don't care. You can give me 10 of them like that with absolutely no review. I'm still ecstatic about it. Whoever you are, I love you. Thank you.
I want the reviews. I want to know how we can be better. Tell us what you like and what you don't like. Or DM us and tell us that. It doesn't matter. Anyways, yeah, James, continue.
You can give us a 5-star review and be like, you guys suck. Step your game up. I'm good with it. Don't care.
It's true.
As long as it's a 5-star review, I don't care.
That's true. You can do that. We'd be okay with it, for sure. But, yeah, so 5-star reviews.
Yeah, silliness aside, we're going to get a little bit serious for a moment. It's been a little bit since we talked to you guys, and some very sad news in the Steeler family has happened. I'm going to let Cody kick off on this one.
Yeah, so again, this is late news. We know that. I didn't want to touch on it last week. Last week's episode with the Penn State draft prospects was pre-recorded for James to be able to go on vacation and not have to worry about an episode being posted. No problems there. We do that kind of stuff every now and then. But I didn't want to address this without both of us here and just the sincere or serious, you know, thing that is life. Like we are all living. We're all humans. We all have an expiration date somewhere down the line. And unfortunately, with the passing of Dwayne Haskins, you know, an expiration date that shouldn't have been there. You know, young player, young man. Very unfortunate passing, and I don't mean to talk about it like a gallon of milk, but I'm like just talking. I'm trying to wrap my head around it because you see that kind of stuff, and you're like, it just doesn't seem real. Like even when I lose my loved ones, it doesn't seem real. But then when you see someone who's famous, who's you know on a football team, an NFL player, a big name, an up and coming potential star, depending on if he gets time to play in Pittsburgh, maybe he, you know, there's so many question marks around the whole situation. But at the end of the day, he's a human. And I think it's even important to say that we don't treat this the way that Adam Schefter did at first. Adam Schefter, I feel like, processes football before he processes people. He processes that he's he's an analysis and it like a media source. And so he puts out information about the person as a football player before as a human being. And so, we want to make sure we talk about Dwayne Haskins as a human being, as a husband, as a son, as a family member. And so this hit me hard and it sucks because with the details coming out, they all seem suspicious and questionable and everything, but you don't want to question the information of a deceased person because it just seems wrong. But at the same time, I have questions about what he was doing on the highway, walking away from a car that apparently ran out of gas and apparently had a intoxicated female in the car. Like there's so many questions up. Like, was he trying to do the right thing and give her a ride and then got caught, like didn't want the media to catch him and got worried, or there's so many questions. But again, all that matters is, and I'm gonna bring it right back around, we have nothing but prayers and positive energy going out to the Haskins family, to his entire extended family, to the Steelers organization, to his wife, who released a beautiful and touching statement that she released through Pittsburgh. It's just sad, man. I don't even know what else to say. Like I'm still at a loss of words, and it's been like a week. So I don't know.
Yeah, just a sad thing, you know, and from everything that you hear from people that reported on the team, he was really working hard to try to turn his image in being a good teammate. I mean, let's be real. This was an invitation that he got from Mitchell Trubisky, the new quarterback that was brought in and given 7 times as much money as him. And he said, "Hey, come practice with me." And that takes a large amount of humility to say yes in that position when someone was just brought in basically almost certainly kicking you out of your job. He would have still had a chance at having a job on the back end of the roster, but the likelihood of him beating out both Mason Rudolph and Mitchell Trubisky was low. And
Yep.
that shows an incredible amount of humility to be able to say, "Hey, I want to be there for my teammates. I want to practice with them. I want to see if there's anything I can do to better myself or help better any of my teammates." That shows a team first mentality, and you have to give him credit for that. You know, having just traveled this last week to North Carolina and then down to Florida myself, I wasn't on that stretch of 595. That was a lot further south than where I got to. But I can tell you from my experience, as close as I did get to it, because I got down to around the Orlando area and saw some stretches of 95 and some other areas where it kind of stretches off. The speed limit's 70. Nobody goes less than about 85. And that was 6 lanes wide where he was at.
Yeah.
I think personally that if his vehicle did run out of gas, just like people are talking about, it was smart to try to get the heck off of that highway, because if somebody hits your car, you're probably not going to make it. You got to get out of there, man. So if that's what he was doing, I completely understand. Like, you got to try to get out of there. You got to try to get help, whatever. It really sucks. That's the way his life ended. You know, 24 years old is just way too young.
Way too
Way too
young.
young.
Way too young.
Doesn't matter how you feel about an individual, whether you like them, whether you don't like them. It's way too young. It's a tragedy, and it really sucks.
Yeah. And I think to go back towards the Steelers aspect of this, we're not going to hang around here long, guys. We have a show in place for you guys, a little bit of news, and then we're going to get into another mock draft that I did before next week. We go over our last one before the draft that James will do. But with that being said, I'm kind of disappointed in Mason Rudolph, if I'm being honest. And I don't I saw so many heartfelt messages and heartfelt posts, and the only thing that Mason Rudolph posted was devastated. One word. And I don't think it's because he didn't, and I'm not trying to be mean, I'm not trying to be picky, I'm not trying to be anything like this, but like, that was a teammate that you played with for a while, and you didn't have anything more to say other than devastated. Like, not one nice thing to say about him. Like, there were so many guys that I saw that even Pat Freiermuth posted a really heartfelt thing of like, "Hey, like, I just was with you. You were such a good teammate. You were a brother," like all this stuff. And Mason posts devastated. I don't, and I even sent the one thing to you about how Mason tried to go in and play at the end of the Browns game, Big Ben's last home game. I don't see leadership capabilities in Mason Rudolph, and it's solidifying now with the loss of Robert, or excuse me, with the loss of Dwayne Haskins. I just have no words for Mason Rudolph as a leader anymore. Like, you had the opportunity to really say some nice words about a player, about a teammate, about a friend, maybe not friend, who knows? And I'm just disappointed with him a little. And maybe you're not. Maybe you're like, "Eh, whatever." But that's just kind of how I view that a little bit. Maybe I'm
Yeah,
overlooking it.
I completely understand why you feel that way. I just feel like we all kind of deal with things differently, you know. So I don't necessarily look down on him for not writing like more than just a single word devastated. I mean, we saw what happened last year with Stephon Tuitt.
Yeah.
You know, his brother passed away, and he couldn't even stomach the idea of stepping on a football field. Like, he just couldn't do it. Like, we all handle tragedies and a loss in different ways. And it could be that he's just one of those guys that it just isn't, you know, he didn't know what to say, and he didn't want to say something and have it get misconstrued. Like, how, you know, I mean, the initial thing, as you said, with Adam Schefter is talking about the struggles that Dwayne had on the field, and it's just not the appropriate time to talk about that. And maybe he just was trying to, you know, he felt devastated, and that's what he wrote, and he didn't want to do anything more because he didn't want somebody jumping down his throat because he's already getting people jumping down his throat.
Yeah, sorry.
I feel like the poor kid could get up and put like a sock on and then another sock, and people be like, why didn't you put your other shoe on before you put your second sock on? What's wrong with you, Mason? Like, I feel like he's just getting like so over criticized for stuff these days. I feel for him. I feel for him. Usually the backup quarterback is just one of like the most favorite people in an organization, and somehow in Pittsburgh he became like the most hated man in town.
Yeah, I don't know I don't know what happened. I'm not going to get into it right now. That's a whole nother conversation. But again, our prayers and our hearts are with the Haskins family, the Steelers organization, and the players. But with that being said, speaking of Steelers players, we're going to talk about some previous Steelers players, ex-Steelers players, specifically two of them, one defense, one offense, Rod Woodson and Hines Ward. James, why are those guys making news headlines right now?
Because their expertise on the field has led them to opportunities in the coaching world, which is tremendous. So the XFL, which is premiering next year in 2023, has announced its 8 head coaches, and this is only 8 teams that they have. Small organization here. Yep. That's the way this always starts. Two of the head coaches, one is Hines Ward, one is Rod Woodson, which is tremendous. Hines has been a wide receiver coach for a few years, started off as an intern coach, got into wide receiver coach, and was really kind of working his way up through the ranks in the NFL. And now this kind of opportunity, it does make you think, hey, maybe something happens after that 2023 season. Maybe these guys are successful as head coaches there, and then they get opportunities in the NFL, which is tremendous if this happens, because it just helps with the whole image issue that the NFL is having right now. These are both class act guys on and off the field. If you get an opportunity for them to possibly become head coaches in the NFL, you only help the brand. You only help the brand. And it helps to kind of, I can't say right the wrongs, but at least it starts getting you in the right direction again as being more diverse in the head coaching world. Because it is a little bit of an issue in the NFL right now. There's 3 now African-American head coaches, and when probably 80%+ of your players are African-American, we don't have the right balance going on there. There's plenty of very, very smart guys in the NFL that can handle coaching, and a lot of them that get into it. So it's time to give some of them some opportunities, and I'm very happy to see 2 guys of that caliber getting their opportunity in the XFL, and excited to see what that could do for them in the future.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't agree more. I think Hines Ward, watching him be a coach on the sideline to certain players, even you think back to Santonio Holmes in the Super Bowl when he caught the touchdown, Hines Ward was coaching him on the sideline. Whether it be moral coaching or emotional coaching, he was coaching him on the sideline, saying, like, you got this. Like, it was right after he missed the touchdown in the end zone and then wound up catching one, and Hines Ward was like, you got this.
Yeah.
So, real exciting to see what Hines Ward can do. Rod Woodson, I didn't get to watch as much, but seeing him talk football and everything, another Dick LeBeau defensive-minded player, real exciting to see what both those guys can do, and I'm excited to see more what happens when they face off against each other. I think that'll be quite interesting, to say the least. But what else do we got news-wise? Pittsburgh Steelers news.
Okay. There's a little bit more news. The last piece of information here, we are recently hearing rumors through the Pittsburgh media, a lot of this being released by guys like Jerry Dulac or Ed Bouchette. These kind of guys are starting to leak some of the information that they think they know. Yep. And the rumors are going on right now that Pittsburgh has trades in place for draft day for the first round that would allow for them to move up to either the 7th overall pick or the 12th overall pick, depending on how things play out in the draft. So this would not be something they would do previous to the draft starting. They would wait to see how these draft picks in front of that go, and then if it goes in a way that is favorable for them and who they are interested in trading up for, then they're ready to pull the trigger. But the question becomes then, who or what positions? And we've got some suspicions, Cody.
We do. So if they go for the 7th round pick, we're assuming it's quarterback.
The seventh overall pick.
Seventh overall. You know what I mean. I'm getting excited to talk about my draft, and I'm looking at it right now.
Did you take a quarterback in the seventh round?
No.
Did you just need some insight?
Not even close. okay. But the seventh overall pick is right after Carolina. So Carolina is presumed to be one of the teams targeting a quarterback. With that being said, if the Carolina Panthers do take a quarterback, then Pittsburgh knows, hey, if we want A or B quarterback, we got to go to seven to get him before someone else comes off the board. It's also been talked about the Detroit Lions looking at a quarterback at number two. If they do that, you know, there goes something as well. Even if you look right at eight, Atlanta Falcons have the potential to take a quarterback with their starting quarterback this year being Marcus Mariota at this point. A lot of interesting things moving on. That seven position really, really puts you in a position to potentially get one of the top two, top three quarterbacks. Where they're probably looking at the top two based on our knowledge. Now, I think they're still probably going to draft a quarterback this year one way or another. But with that being said, those are the guys that I think they'd be looking at, or we think, I should say, they'd be looking at the seventh overall pick. The other option would be a high-end safety. If a high-end safety was available there, specifically Kyle Hamilton from Notre Dame is a potential target there as well.
Yeah, so the seventh overall spot really screams quarterback to me. Mm-hmm. And like you mentioned, Atlanta Falcons being at eight. I want to say that, do you have the order in front of you, Cody?
I
feel like 9 and 10 are quarterback-hungry teams too.
One of those? Seattle is nine, and they're not quite as hungry with Drew Lock. They got Drew Lock.
Drew Lock is awful. They need a quarterback.
Believe me, I know, but I think they took him. I don't know. We'll see what happens. Yeah. But Seattle and New York Jets. I don't think the Jets are as hungry as.
Yeah, they're not going for a quarterback. They just drafted theirs.
And then you got Washington after that, who just picked up Carson Wentz. You have the Minnesota Vikings, who have Kirk Cousins.
B1. Yeah, so there's some teams there, man. Specifically those next two, Atlanta.
And then 13 is the Texans. So
yeah. So there's definitely seven to me screams quarterback, and 12 to me screams defensive player. So I feel like if they're looking at seven saying, hey, there's two guys that we're comfortable with, either one of them falls, we'll jump up to seven and we'll take them. If both those quarterbacks are gone, which again, we said number two, Detroit, number six,
Carolina,
both heavily interested in the quarterback market, or at least rumored to be so. And if you look at their roster, you'd say they're definitely looking for quarterbacks. 12, on the other hand, screams who fell in the draft. When we were talking about the draft like 3 months ago, everybody was saying Kyle Hamilton, the safety out of Notre Dame, was expected to be a top five pick. And a lot of people said he was the best talent in this entire draft class. Then he goes to the combine and he runs a 4.59 40, and people say, oh, I don't know. That doesn't change his tape. His tape is still absolutely tremendous. And as I've said on this show in previous episodes, if you watch that 40-yard dash that he ran, he was kind of wandering left to right as he was going down it. He didn't run it in a straight line. So his timed speed should actually be faster than that 4.59. And some guys just play a lot faster than what they time. I mean, you look at Deontay Johnson, he was like a 4.55, 40-yard dash. He's no 4.55 on the field. Nope. Same thing with Antonio Brown. He was in the mid-4.5s. He was a lot faster than that on the field. Some guys just don't time well in these kind of events. And I think that if Kyle Hamilton were still available at 12, that would definitely be somebody they should be thinking about jumping up for. I'll go back to somebody I was very high on, again, 2-3 months ago, Sauce Gardner. If Sauce is there at 12, I think you're
There's
crazy
no
not to jump up.
There's no way he's there at 12. He's gone top 10. If he's not gone top 10, the people coaching and staffing these teams are idiots, period.
Yeah.
End of discussion.
I agree 100%. But if it's not Sauce, it could be Andrew Booth. It could be Derek Stingley Jr. Some of these top corners, a lot of times, by the time like 15 hits, three or four of them are gone already.
I will say one of those corners went at 12 in my mock draft.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Doesn't surprise me.
So that kind of adds some fuel to what we're talking about here. But then also, don't undersell the idea of Jordan Davis. I mean, Mike Tomlin said, I think that that guy is going to be shaking hands with Roger Goodell long before we pick at 20.
Yep.
Well, I think he's right. And if you love him that much, why not trade up and get him? Especially if it's somebody that's that generational, that game changing, can stuff the run like he can take on two offensive linemen and still win like he can, and can run like that.
Here's my reason for Pittsburgh jumping up to 12 to get Jordan Davis, which if I had the ability to do that in this, I would. Because my fear, and I've said it once and I will say it again, my fear is that the Baltimore Ravens draft Jordan Davis and become... it's already very difficult sometimes to run against them. If they have Jordan Davis, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Pass It'll only. Be like
what it was with Haloti Ngata.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't want it again. I don't want it. No. I don't want it. So
nope. I'm with you. That is also a large fear of mine, is that they get some kind of generational talent like that, and then we got to deal with them.
In about 9 of the 10 mock drafts I've done for fun and even this one, spoiler alert, Jordan Davis, number 14, Baltimore Ravens.
Ugh, scary.
I don't like it, James. I don't like it.
Me either, man. Me either. In talking, do you have anybody else you think that they might be interested in that? I don't want to shut you off in case you had any other ideas.
No, the only, I mean, if you're trading up, it's either for Pickett, Willis, or one of the top corners or that top safety, or Jordan Davis. I think there's nobody else that they would trade up for to either of those draft pick, or to either 7 or 12. I don't think there's anybody else in the top round draft that they trade up for.
So, I agree.
So with that being said, you want to go?
Let's go, man. I want to hear this. Okay. I want to hear your mock. I'm excited about this.
Because James hasn't heard it yet, you guys. James has not heard this yet, so James is going to have a natural and genuine reaction to this. I shouldn't say natural. Nothing with you is natural. Anyways.
Especially when I'm on this stuff right here,
the
baby.
Red Bull, yep.
Compliments of Cody.
Yeah. I left it on his car after work. I'm going to go through round by round, but not pick by pick. I'm going to say specific names who went off the board, which is why I made certain picks. So first round, Carolina Panthers did draft Malik Willis. Kyle Hamilton went 7 to the Giants, and then Ahmad Gardner 9, Derek Singletary Jr. 10, and then you had Andrew Booth Jr., the corner from Clemson, went 12 to the Vikings. After that, like I said, Jordan Davis 14 to the Ravens, Kenny Pickett number 16 overall to the New Orleans Saints. Very interesting there. So then we came up at 20. And there wasn't a whole lot there. I debated on going wide receiver. I just couldn't get myself to draft Chris Olave in the first. Not because he's not first-round talent, but because I just couldn't get myself to draft a wide receiver in the first. So I did go with the guy that was next to Jordan Davis and drafted Devontae Wyatt. So that was my choice there. I still think that Pittsburgh needs to solidify that defensive line. Even with, you know, Alualu coming back to it, coming back, all these things. I want to solidify the future of that D-line, and I think Devontae Wyatt can potentially do that. And then to end the first round, guys that I was looking for later on, Jaquan Brisker went at 32 to Detroit Lions. If he would have fallen to the second round, that absolutely would have drafted him in the second. With that being said, go for it. Yeah, let's talk. I'll stop after each round.
I want to react. First instinct on this, I like it, and I like it because to me, Devontae Wyatt is a very, very similar mold to Stephon Tuitt, to Cameron Hayward, except more athletic. We talk all the time about how athletic Jordan Davis was running that 4.77 40-yard dash.
Yep.
Well, Wyatt was like 4.78. So still really fast at just a hair over 300 pounds. He's got the length. He's got the size. He's got the production. He had way more sacks than Jordan Davis did. Now, granted, he was used as a pass rusher more often. Yep. But it is somebody that you immediately can look at and say, wow, if the crap hits the fan and for some reason we lose to it or we lose Cam for the year, or maybe to it has a change of heart and he just can't do it. He's not coming back. He can't stomach the idea of playing. Nobody will blame him if it happens. Yep. You've got your guy right there for the next 10 years. So I like it. I like it a lot. There's only two defensive lineman in the first round that I will be okay with them drafting, yep, that I'll be really, really happy about. I'll probably be okay if Perrion Winfrey sneaks into the first round too, but I don't think it'll happen because I don't think they went to his pro day with the right people.
Yep.
You got to have Kevin Colbert or it just doesn't happen. This is a study that Alex Kozora from Steelers Depot has done. And since 2009, Kevin Colbert and Mike Tomlin are at the pro day of every single first round draft pick. Ziggy Hood was the last one that they weren't both at, and it didn't work out that great. But that also means that it was a very good thought process on your part of not going Chris Olave from Ohio State,
yep,
because they didn't go to the Ohio State Pro Day. That doesn't mean they wouldn't draft him. It just means they're probably not going to draft him in the first round.
Yep. Yep. So moving on to the second round, names that went off the board at 35 overall, Lewis Cine, the safety from Georgia, went. I would have debated on drafting him. Desmond Ridder went to Seattle, as well as Daniel Falele. Back-to-back picks to the Seattle Seahawks, quarterback and offensive tackle. Very rough there. Sky Moore, a really talented wide receiver, went to the Atlanta Falcons.
Explosive.
Yep. Perrion Winfrey, who I wouldn't even debate on drafting after drafting Devontae Wyatt, but just for notable sake, went 46 to the Vikings. Matt Corral, quarterback from Ole Miss, went to the Washington Commanders.
I like Matt Corral.
I do too. Jalen, the safety from Baylor, went at 49, and then it got to us at 52. Notable names on the board that I was looking at here. George Pickens was still on the board. Quay Walker was still on the board. Trying to see. Nick Cross was still on the board. Those were probably the top guys, and also Chad Muma, the linebacker from Wyoming. I decided to draft Sam Howell, quarterback from North Carolina. I do believe that Pittsburgh will leave this draft with a quarterback one way or another. I don't think we're going to get past the third round before they do it. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I do think that's going to happen. So I wanted to draft a quarterback here because I wasn't confident with the other guys potentially falling. So give me your feedback.
Sam Howell is on the short list.
I know.
Of guys that Pittsburgh definitely likes. They went and saw him in North Carolina multiple times last year. And it's a guy that's pretty accurate, pretty athletic, pretty strong arm. He kind of shows you about everything that you're looking for in a quarterback. The only reason that he's not being talked about in the top of the first round is A, he's not real tall. He's only like 6'1". And B, his production dropped off a little bit this last year, but he also lost two wide receivers and two running backs to the NFL draft. Yep. So the talent he was working with really dropped off from the 2020 season to the 2021 season. And then what you saw is as things broke down, he drastically increased his rushing yards. Mm-hmm. So I want to say he had over 600 yards rushing last year, which for a quarterback who's not necessarily known for his running is really good. So I think that if Sam Howell happens in the second round, it's a nice pick for Pittsburgh. You know, I'm not going to be disappointed. I think it's a guy that could be an improvement over Mitchell Trubisky and over Mason Rudolph, and that's what you're looking for, a guy that has the possibility of being better than them.
Yep. Yep. Carson Strong was available there as well, just so you know. I apologize that we didn't get the Strong last name on a Steelers jersey in this mock draft. It's not. But he did go. Carson Strong went as the second overall pick in the third round. So there was that. He went fairly quickly after that. In this third round, names that came off the board again before us, Brian Cook, safety from Cincinnati, Jalen Tolbert, wide receiver from South Alabama, went to the Browns. Trey McBride, tight end, Colorado State.
That's the tight end, right?
Yep, tight end to the New York Giants. And then we came up at 84. Nick Benito, the edge rusher from Oklahoma, went right before us to the Philadelphia Eagles. That was somebody that I was looking at a little bit. Sam Williams was available here, the edge rusher from Ole Miss that I talked about before, as well as Isaiah Likely, another tight end. And that's kind of looking. Darian Beavers, the linebacker from Cincinnati, was also available. But sitting here at 84 overall, I wound up drafting cornerback Cam Taylor-Britt from Nebraska. I think we drafted him potentially in the first one as well, the first mock draft. I could be wrong. But I like his size. I like his length. I like his ability to play the route. He's very good at playing the route. He's very good man-to-man. I enjoy his hand-to-ball capabilities. His hand-eye coordination when it comes to defending a ball or defending a pass is very good. And I think that Pittsburgh needs another cornerback, and if potentially early like this in the third round, to solidify a growing and maturing secondary.
I like him, man. He's one of those guys that you're looking for the appropriate size and speed combo, right?
Mm-hmm.
So Cam Taylor, Britt, 5'10 and a half, 196 pounds, 31 and a half inch on the arm length. So he meets the threshold just barely, but that's the way this draft class is. Let's be honest. Not a lot of real long armed dudes. And then the 40, a 4.38 is tremendous. So we believe very strongly on this podcast, and I say that not to be punny, but very strongly that when Pittsburgh takes a corner, if they take a corner in this draft, and I think we both think it's pretty likely that they'll take a corner at some point,
yep,
it needs to be a guy with high-end speed. Because of the elite wide receivers that Pittsburgh now has to deal with in the playoffs, most likely for the foreseeable future, you've got to have somebody can run with these guys. And this is somebody who could. A 4.38, 40 is tremendous.
Yep. Yeah, I agree. That's why I drafted him. moving on to the fourth round, guys that came off the board before me at 110 to the Ravens, Jake Ferguson, tight end from Wisconsin, another tight end I was looking at. You had Alec Lindstrom, not really, I don't think I was looking at him anyways. Jesse Luketa, linebacker, yep, from Penn State, went to the Cleveland Browns. That was fun.
He'd probably start for them.
He probably would. Brandon Smith, another linebacker, Penn State, went to the Los Angeles Chargers. Alec Pierce, wide receiver from Cincinnati, went to the Miami Dolphins. Not sure if they need any more wide receivers, but he's there. Isaiah Thomas, edge rusher from Oklahoma, went to Tennessee. At 132, with Pittsburgh sitting at 138, Jelani Woods, tight end from Virginia, went off the board to the Green Bay.
That's painful.
To the Green Bay Packers. I was very upset. And then 136, two picks before us, JT Woods, safety from Baylor, went. Was real upset about that one. So with that being said, there were a couple guys available here. You had Danny Gray, wide receiver from SMU, who we've talked about. Bo Melton, wide receiver from Rutgers, that we've talked about. You also had guys like Romeo Dubs, another wide receiver. I'm looking to see here. Yusuf Corker available, safety. I chose to go with the offensive line route because we haven't addressed it yet. Luke Fortner, interior offensive lineman from Kentucky. I felt that his size and power, his ability, his flexibility, interior offensive line, I think is a little bit more important in my mind right now than tackle. I could be wrong. But I think that we've seen what happens when when our centers go down. We've seen how horrible it is trying to get somebody in there. And I think Luke Fortner adds a little bit of flexibility on the interior offensive line because he can come in and play either guard and someone can move into the center position. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. He's definitely a good piece. He's one of the expected mid-round centers right around where you took him. That's where people are expecting him to go. I think he solidifies the depth on the interior right away and then pushes, maybe even wins the starting job as the center. You would be putting him right up against last year's third round pick Kendrick Green, and then the free agent we took from the Minnesota Vikings as well. Kind of have a three-way battle at the center position in doing that. My only thing is, I was really hoping to hear you say a wide receiver or a safety, just because I feel like those are some pretty pressing needs on the team.
I agree.
And after the fourth, you're waiting until the sixth round, and that makes me nervous about the talent that'll be available at that time. But the player I like the player.
Well, let's see what happens here, James.
All right.
So in the fifth round, Romeo Dubs came off the board. Looking at Yusuf Corker came off the board to Seattle, the safety. Reed Blankenship, the safety, came off the board to Dallas Cowboys. Looking at other guys, some big name or some decent name corners came off the board, but I wasn't looking at that at this point in time. You're looking specifically wide receiver, safety. I'm seeing who came off the board before I could pick again. Not
I'm
many.
I'm gonna bet that you lost Danny Gray and Bo Melton by the time the sixth round.
Yeah. For sure.
Both are gonna be in the crosshairs of Pittsburgh.
Yep.
Bo Melton, I know I talk about him all the time on this podcast. Alex Kozora, Steelers Depot, did a study. He always does this every year of what the Steelers look for. So he takes like the last 10, 12 years, puts in all the numbers, height, weight, arm length, 40-yard dash, jumping, vertical, broad, bench, all these things, short shuttles. And he puts it in and comes up with minimum threshold numbers of what the Steelers look for, and then sees, crosses that with the upcoming draft class to see who hits how many of them. Bo Melton was one of those guys that hit dang near every single one of them. It was like 8 of the 9 categories he hit, and one of them that he hit was like very minimal off. And I think Danny Gray was pretty high on that too, and they went to both pro days. So both of those guys will be on Pittsburgh's radar, but again, it all depends on how things fall in the draft.
Absolutely.
So just definitely keep those names in your mind when draft day comes around.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the sixth round now. Justin Ross, wide receiver Clemson, Charleston Rambo, wide receiver Miami, went off the board at 185 to the Buffalo Bills. Pierre Strong Jr. went off the board. I missed it. I know. Tariq Carpenter, safety from Georgia Tech, came off the board.
Your draft sucks.
My draft does suck. I miss both Strongs.
Oh, no, I'm kidding.
Isaiah, the safety from USC, came off the board at 197.
Polamau.
You are correct. How did you know?
Because you looked at me.
Yep. So then 208. At 208, we came back up on the board, and I drafted a guy, a defensive player from Georgia Tech. By the name of Wanye Thomas.
Let's go, Cody. Nice pick.
So he was available there. I was between him and Nick Grant, the safety from Virginia. I just felt that Nick Grant was more of the, not what we're looking for, the safety. I felt like Wanye Thomas had some good tape. We got to see some great play from him in the, not the
Shrine Game.
Shrine Game. Thank you. Shrine Bowl, whatever you want to call it. So yeah, Wanye Thomas.
Yep, and Wanye, a favorite of Cody and I's. You know, we didn't get to see him play in college a ton. It's extremely important for these guys when you go to one of these games, whether it be the East-West Shrine Game or the Bowl, I should say, I'm sorry, or the Senior Bowl. When you get the invitation to these games, it's your opportunity as a player to really step up and show what you're capable of. A lot of the guys in the East-West Shrine Bowl are expected to be third round or later type guys. So if you go to that game and you excel and you really stick out as one of the better players, now you're looking at a lot of people thinking, well, hey, man, this guy probably could go third, fourth round. I think if Wanye Thomas had a faster 40, people would be talking him in that round. But I want to say he was like a 4.55, so he's not slow, he's not blazing fast, he's adequate on his speed. Tremendous hitter, absolutely tremendous hitter, and he wraps up while doing so, which you'll love to see. So he's got the size you're looking for, the tackling capability that you're looking for, meets a lot of the minimum thresholds, and really just a pretty fun guy to watch on the field, let's be honest. He immediately steps up your special teams game right out of the gate because he's going to knock some people's heads off. Mm-hmm. And if he wins the starting strong safety job, you know, he's going to be fun. He's going to be fun. He's going to be really fun when he fills that alley and whacks a running back and knocks him on his butt.
Absolutely. So seventh round comes around. You had two safeties go off the first two picks. Luckily, I already got my safety. We're sitting at 225, and there's a wide receiver on the board that I've been looking at and debating between. So I'm looking at him. I'm also looking at Tyler Vrabel, the offensive tackle, son of the great
Mike Vrabel.
Mike Vrabel, Boston College. But I went with the wide receiver, Jalen Naylor, wide receiver from Michigan State. Now, Jalen Naylor ran a 4.5 40 at his pro day, at his combine. And then also put up 14 reps on the bench at his pro day. He's not a huge guy. He's 6'1", 190. But I liked the size. I liked the combination with size and moderate speed. He's not slow by any means. And in college, I think just this past year, he had 23. No, I misplaced the stats. This year he had 23 receptions, 490 yards, 21.3 average per reception with 6 touchdowns.
Ooh. That's a deep threat guy.
That is a deep threat guy. Middle of the field, exactly kind of what I'm looking for. With the ability to control the center of the field and the side, the flats with tight both tight end Pat Freiermuth and Najee Harris. I'm looking for someone to go the middle ground because you obviously have Chase Claypool and Diontae Johnson as, you know, deep threats as well. Diontae Johnson can even do, you know, slants and quick outs like that as well. So I'm excited to see what Jalen Naylor does. I've actually not eyed him up as much as I potentially thought before this. I recognized the name, and then once I looked him up, looked up some highlights, I was like, okay, this is someone that if Pittsburgh actually drafted, I'd be really okay with that, especially at 225. So yeah, wide receiver. There you go. You wanted safety and wide receiver? I got him right there for you, bud.
From an organization that Pittsburgh loves to draft from, let's be real, they do draft from Michigan a decent amount. And one thing I'm going to say real quick on Jalen Naylor, a lot of wide receivers for Pittsburgh, they don't necessarily draft guys that have blazing 40s, nope. But they always look for good explosion numbers. You're talking about a 38-inch vertical and a 10-8 broad, which is tremendous. So you're talking about a guy that's going to have really good short area acceleration and quickness. And with, you said, what, 14 reps on a bench?
14 reps on the bench.
That means, yeah, that's very strong for a wide receiver. So he's going to be tough enough to take a hit, and he's going to be able to play probably inside in the slot, I would imagine, with that kind of quickness and strength. And that's what Pittsburgh needs right now is a slot option. So day one, you got a guy that might be able to come out there and push for that slot position against some of the veterans like Anthony Miller and some of the other guys on the team right now.
Yeah, and I actually want to do a quick comparison just because I'm really curious. James Washington, a player that Steelers drafted. I was curious to see what his combine stats were. Excuse me, not his combine, his pro day stats, because this guy reminds me a lot of James Washington. James Washington was very strong, very capable. And of course they're not coming up pro day results. I'm not going to find it. That's fine. But yeah, I wanted another wide receiver who can stretch the field, who has the strength to win a jump ball, which those 14 reps on the bench should do. And remember, we watched that one play over and over again. I think we posted it on Instagram, James Washington blocking that guy into the end zone. I want to get another wide receiver on the team that can block. We lost Juju. We lost James Washington. Those were probably the two most capable blocking wide receivers on the team at the time. So we got to get someone who's capable of doing that again, because I haven't seen it consistently from Diontae or Chase Claypool enough that I'm comfortable running behind them. So with that being said, no notable names came off between the two picks that we had in the seventh. Nothing that I'm going to mention other than Tyler Vrabel, again, offensive tackle from Boston College.
I got a note for you real quick here.
Oh, go for it.
So I got his combine results for you.
Mm-hmm.
So not the pro day, but close enough.
Yeah,
4.54 on the 40-yard dash, so very similar there. The height, again, well, I think he was 5'10", although they don't have it. They've got it as 71 inches, so whatever. I guess that's 5'11". 213, so he was a lot heavier, but also 14 reps on the bench. So the same strength is what we're looking at there.
Yep.
So I think there's a lot of similarities to these two guys here. I think your instinct on that was absolutely spot on.
Boom, baby. I did this one real quick and I was confident with it. And then at 241, right before us, there was two players that I probably would have drafted, actually. Joshua Ross, linebacker from Michigan, and Ellis Brooks, linebacker from Penn State. We didn't address the linebacker position in this draft, unfortunately. But at 241, I did keep the trend going, and I drafted another Michigan State player, a tight end by the name of Connor Hayward.
Ironhead! But Ironhead, what's with this thingy?
What are you
it's
doing?
It's called a loofah, fool.
Oh, my gosh.
That's right. Ironhead's son, who's going to play fullback just like Ironhead did, he's going to break down barriers just like Ironhead made it masculine to use a loofah to wash yourself, for crying out loud. This is the same kind of throwback player, except Ironhead didn't have the hands that Connor has. He's got some tremendous catching capability. He's really good at high pointing the football. He won't play tight end in the league just because he's only 5'11". But that 4.7 40 speed is pretty good for a fullback, and he's a tremendous tackler on special teams. So We've talked about this before. We love the idea of adding Connor Hayward at the end of the draft, even carrying two fullbacks for one season, and then going forward in the 2023 season with Connor Hayward as your starting fullback. Moving on from Derek Watt, which you kind of don't expect them to give him an extension. He's playing tremendous on special teams. He's just not being used on offense.
I love the idea. Not at all. With that, just a quick recap again for those of you that care about the recaps. Devontae Wyatt, interior defensive line, Georgia. Sam Howell, quarterback from North Carolina. Cam Taylor Britt, cornerback from Nebraska. Luke Fortner, interior offensive lineman from Kentucky. Wanye Thomas, safety from Georgia Tech. Jalen Naylor, wide receiver from Michigan State. And Connor Hayward to round the draft up with tight end from Michigan State. We'd love to see your guys' mock drafts. If you guys haven't already, thedraftnetwork.com/, I believe it's mock draft. You guys can do that there. Maybe we'll post a link on our social or post a link with this in the YouTube video or in the description of the podcast itself. Again, we can't thank you guys for listening. Be sure to follow and like on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. Subscribe and ring the bell. It's free.
Ring the bell.
And until next time, this is your host, James and Cody, signing off.
Peace.